This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 156, sponsored by Discount Comic Book Service, eMusic, and Netflix.
I know I got a bad reputation, and it isn't just talk, talk, talk. If I could only give you everything, you know I haven't got. I couldn't have one conversation if it wasn't for the lies, lies, lies. And still I want to tell you everything till I close my
eyes. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode, astonishingly, 156. My name is Ron, and I'm here with...
Connor.
And...
I'm Josh, and I don't understand what's so astonishing about that number.
It's just, that's a big number. Getting on in years.
They get bigger every week.
I know they do. Anyway, so we are from ifanboy.com, which is a website dedicated to the wonderful world of comic books, where we like to discuss comics. And every week on Wednesday, new comics come out, and one of us writes a review of what we think is the best book that came out that week. It's called The Pick of the Week, and you can read that on ifanboy.com. But then we come here to discuss it, as well as all the other comics that came out during the week, as well as hear from you, the audience. And it's just a big, I can never say that fucking word. It's a big party of comics. So, but before we get started, it is such a good party that we can't keep ourselves from talking about what happened in the books. If you haven't read your comics and you don't want them to be, as they call, spoiled, press pause and come back a little bit later after you've read your books, or just power through and deal with the ramifications. It's your choice. That said, Josh had the pick this week, and I didn't envy you, my friend.
Wait a minute, I had the pick?
You had the pick.
Oh, wow. No, I just had one of those flashbacks, like you get into class and you didn't do your homework.
Oh, nice.
That's how many books I had to read. And that's how difficult it was to pick one. I almost skipped, I'll be honest. I finished them all and I went, maybe if I just duck my head in the sand here, no one will notice. I think that'd be
how many really were like in consideration?
Three of them heavily, a couple of them otherwise. There was just some really good books. And it was hard to figure out what it was that did something new, because there was a lot of books that were, if I may say, still good. You know what I mean? Like, yep. Oh, it's still good.
Like Criminal?
Criminal, Fear Agent, Final Crisis, many,
Captain
many.
America.
Captain. I'm literally losing track.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly. But at the end of the day, I think that I thought that Geoff Johns needed a third in a row. Really.
I was gonna. After I saw what your pick was, I kind of went, oh, so this is how it's gonna be.
I will say that I didn't realize that until after I had posted it and somebody mentioned it, because I had only looked, I was like, I know we did Action Comics, but that wasn't just last week. So, but I came at it from the point of view of my pick was Superman New Krypton Special. There's a one-shot book by basically the entire creative team of the two Superman titles, Geoff Johns and James Robinson.
And Supergirl, Sterling Gates wrote part of it too.
Oh, okay. That's who that person is.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. And basically, I mean, my point of view is I've never been excited about reading a Superman book. And I find it stunning that I'm now reading both of the titles. I actually bought a couple of the specials, and I don't buy the specials. They piss me off that I have to buy them. And I enjoyed them. You know, it's like when annuals are good and you're very surprised. I'm like, whoa, when did this happen? These used to be throwaways. And I happened to – I picked up the Jimmy Olsen special from last week.
Which was very good.
And yes, it was very good. I was actually really, really, really enjoyed it more than any of the Superman issues I had so far. And I was really amped on that. So I went into reading that, and I went into reading this new Krypton, and I was just like, this is the greatest thing. I had so much fun, and I loved – I mean, this is a lot of stuff that we've talked about with Superman, but I like that he is so human, which is ironic. In these stories, he has fault. I loved in this one how he was at one point ready to take out his rage on Brainiac. That's neat. And then finally, like, the thing that really did it for me in this issue, that like the moment that I sort of thought was the most funny but with serious ramifications, was when the first Kryptonian killed the blue whale.
Yes.
And to me,
I'm sorry, I have no context to this, and this is like, what?
Are you reading Action?
No, I'm not reading. I don't read Superman.
Oh, well, basically this. In the whole Brainiac thing that happened, the other thing that's cool about this, by the way, is that all of the stories and all the different titles are coming together in one place.
I did notice that this issue had a little number one symbol on the cover. Are they bringing back a sequence of numbering?
Yeah, just so one. Under the one, there's a one inside the Superman symbol, which is your indicator of what order to read the Superman books in.
So we're back to that.
Yes. That was a 90s device back when the Superman books were all connected. You had to read them in order. This tells you what order to read them in.
Hey, wouldn't it be nice if Secret Invasion did as much?
It's true.
They'd be all messed up. Well, this doesn't technically come before it, but it does in the sequence. Anyway, in the Action story, in Geoff Johns' Action story with Brainiac, they freed the bottle city of Kandor, and it grew to full size in the Arctic near this Fortress of Solitude. And so basically now there is an entire city full of Kryptonians on the run. It turns out that they're not necessarily as morally sound. Not that they're bad guys.
I don't think that's true at all. I think they're like children. They don't have
any context
for having these superpowers. So they go, one of them encounters a blue whale that tries to eat him, and he punches it. And the blue whale dies. He brings it back like a trophy. Look at this thing, tried to eat me, and I punched it.
I punched the whale. That's awesome. Yeah.
And they're all like, cool, you punched it. And Superman's like, wait a minute. He realizes that, at first he's really happy he's got Kryptonians back, and then he realizes, I've got a serious problem on my hands.
That's exactly it. Like, it's kind of a funny scene, but it's a giant shitstorm. And it's not that they're not morally, but they don't. They weren't raised by a Ma and Pa Kent. And so they're not necessarily responsible. And the one Kryptonian, he's like, can you do something about this? They can't be flying all over the place. And the Kryptonian's like, hey, man, we don't control them. They're free. Let them go. Like, they're basically like the Amish people who just got left, like that 16-year-old Amish person who's been let out for their year of sin.
The wilding.
Yeah, except they all have the powers of Superman.
Nice.
And then there's a double-page spread of thousands of them flying out of Kandor in every direction. So now you realize there's thousands of these time bombs now entering society, and that's the new Krypton story, and that's what's so exciting about
it. That's pretty cool. Why didn't they just stay in Kandor?
Because now they can fly.
It's like saying, oh, now that you got a driver's license,
why don't you just stay?
You're gonna stay on your block? No,
yeah.
You're gonna go as far as you can, and then. But the thing is, like, you've spent all this time. DC has spent decades convincing us of how much of a god that Superman is, and now there's thousands of them.
Mm.
So that's a problem.
And not also, only that, but the beginning that wraps – basically, this is the perfect bridge. It wraps up the death of Pa with an incredibly emotional, almost completely silent sequence by Geoff Johns and Gary Frank dealing with the funeral and the ramifications of that. And that was just devastating. Some of the art in that. There's a scene where Clark is back home and he finds his dad's box of like trinkets, the stuff he's given over the years. And you flash back to that. And then that last page is just him crumpled on the floor.
Oh, man.
And he's really crumpled.
Like he's got his head in his hands, and his glasses are on the ground, and he's just broken. And it was just
that's the thing. It's like the number of times Pa has died, I never really remember the Superman's reaction to it.
They usually skip over it.
Yeah, normally he just makes a fist and then goes and does something. You know what I mean? Like, but this seems like this is really like a realistic reaction to the death.
And I also really like that Bruce was there.
Yeah,
yeah, which is very subtle. And then, you know, the last bit of it is that Jimmy Olsen, who really, that Jimmy Olsen special, if you can, you should pick it up, is on to a sort of secret government plot to kill Superman. They've let Lex Luthor out of jail to help them do such. And he's just like, about time. Let's do this thing. Overall, it was fun. It's Geoff Johns, James Robinson. It was like the best of what both of those guys do all wrapped up at the same time. and it was big and fun. And there were several artists on it, which some people said it threw them off. It didn't really bug me.
No, they were all good, so it didn't really.
Yeah, exactly. And there was different things about each of them that were really good. The giant spreads of New Krypton, and like there was just some gorgeous stuff. And I really the coloring in this book, I really like, because they're making it consistent across all of the books. It's a little flatter than you're used to.
Yeah, I like that though. It's kind of like Invincible blues, almost.
Yeah. The blues and the reds just sort of stand out at you like they should. And, you know, I'm shocked that this was my pick.
There was so much good about it, though. It bridged the story. It set up this New Krypton story perfectly. It set up the whole killing Superman story. I mean, everything was set up great, and everything's ended great. And I love the Lex Luthor segment, that mm-hmm. his solitary cell was completely covered in diagrams and designs and things that he's been working on in the dark while he's been in prison.
Right, but just, they were...
Everything was perfectly captured.
What did he say? He was working on a rocket that would save the world. And he's like, I don't really want to do that, though. I just want to kill Superman. Like, he again, we've talked about this. He could put his power to so much good, but he's just so obsessed that he doesn't.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Now, I don't want to say too much, but as the person with the pick next week is Rage of the Red Lanterns. I'm just saying. Jeff Johns has a chance. Jeff Johns has a chance to make the month sweep. I'm just saying. I'm not...
Wow.
You know, I always play it straight and go into it with an open mind. I'm just saying, a big Jeff Johns book is out next week.
Yeah, I had not put it together that it was Jeff Johns on all the books.
Well, it's not so much Jeff Johns, but it's just like, I mean, and maybe because I'm also a little biased, but, you know, it's Superman. Enough with the Superman.
Yeah, but they're really good.
Well, I mean, like, seriously, like, how long has it been since Superman was good? The regular series, not just
well,
it's one.
It's funny because I was talking at my store yesterday, and I was flipping through this actually, and I was really impressed with the art. I thought Gary Frank's art was really good, and the other artists that were on this were good. But I just haven't, I just have zero desire to read anything Superman. I have zero, like even down to All-Star Superman, and I get so much shit for it, and you guys give me shit, and rightfully so, because it's supposed to be really good. But I don't relate to the character.
But it's funny because you like Smallville and you like Superman movies, and you like, you know.
Yeah, well, I think we know
ancillary media with him in it.
Yeah, but yeah, true, because it's like little tastes of it, and we know why I like Smallville, because it's bad, you know, because it's fun, you know, like it's fun to like. But yeah, but for some reason, the comics just don't do it for me. I don't know. It's just interesting. Yeah,
I mean, I've tried a bunch of times, and they never have. You know, enough times with, you know, Connor saying action's been really good, and then just everybody else. I was like, well, you know, and I had to check out the James Robinson stuff, which I haven't loved up to this point, but I think that
special was anything, the best thing he's written so far.
Oh, yeah. But the other thing is, you know, the beginning of Starman's not necessarily all that great. Like, it takes a little while for all those things to get going. It takes a little while to get used to it and get your, you know, he's been out of the game for a little while, I think. And, you know, you can start, you don't always start from a run. So, I mean, this could be a cool thing. And it's so far.
It's been like 15 years since all the books have been really good.
Mm-hmm.
At least.
Oh, absolutely.
Since the early part of the 90s when...
Since the death,
when you had Superman, Man of Steel, and all those books had... Adventures of Superman, all those books had good people on them, and it's been a long time.
So maybe we're in for like a no man's land sort of time on the Superman books, which would be great.
Yeah.
Cool. I'd be cool with that.
Awesome. You know, a book hasn't been good for a while is Captain America.
Now, that's...
I couldn't even keep my own straight face for that one.
And do we know why this issue was so good? Three words, my friends. Yeah. Three words.
I know.
What?
It's Batroc the Leaper, isn't it?
Exactly. Not so and much Batroc the Leaper, but Batroc the Leaper.
The Leaper.
and he made him. He made him good.
Yeah.
He wasn't cheesy or stupid.
He was a little cheesy, but in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, it was good stuff.
He's got new goggles.
I opened that page and I thought somewhere Ron is very happy.
Oh, I was just very, very happy when I saw that. Yeah, no, this is great. This is. I mean, you know, this is no the death. I feel like the death isn't hanging over us anymore, and this is what it is. You know,
I will say this. I start with the first page, and the thing I see at the top is Shanghai, China, 1942. You sure this is the right way, Steve? And I see Steve Rogers and Bucky and the Human Torch, and I thought, this is going to be the greatest issue of a comic book I've ever read in my life. And like literally, I mean, I was like, are we going to get a 1942 adventure with all these people?
And then
New York now, I was like, oh. And literally, had it been for those four pages, like if that had continued for the whole issue, no chance this wasn't pick of the week. No chance. That was literally what I thought. And then I was like, well, Batroc the Leaper.
Naked Black Widow.
Yeah.
Who apparently just stays in his bedroom and wears a sheet now.
You can stay here. I'll be back.
Exactly.
When you're Captain America, that's what happens. Yeah, yeah. I had one little problem with this issue. And I didn't like the art.
Ooh, wow.
I didn't like Luke Ross. I feel like the coloring does a lot for this book.
Yeah.
And if you looked at the figures,
Well, it's the same stiff. But it's the same color as, I mean, it's Damarta who's been on it.
Right. I mean is, I think he's done a really good job of keeping the different artists looking this, you know, uniform.
Yeah.
But if you look at a lot of the figure drawing in this, a lot of it's really, really stiff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene where Bucky jumps off his motorcycle to beat up Batroc's thugs, and it's just.
Yeah, no, I remember so that was an awkward. That was an awkward panel. That was definitely an awkward panel. Yeah.
It was very awkwardly, and it kept taking me out of it because I kept looking at it, going, "What is? I don't understand what's wrong. Why am I not enjoying this more?" And I realized this because the art was very stiff. But the story was good. My favorite bit of Marvel physics in all the land is how anybody can move around with a shield attached to their body underneath their clothes.
Yeah, jump off a motorcycle.
It's always been that way. It never shows up. It disappears under the suit or whatever Captain America's wearing at the time. But I loved that. I saw he had this shield under his jacket. And I went, yes, and brought it back because it's so stupid. But it's awesome because it would never work. You know, he'd never be able to move around or bend his body if he had the shield strapped to him.
It changes size like a Transformer.
Exactly. Like he's tapered when he's got his jacket on and he takes it off and the shield's there. And you would think,
I'm 40 feet high. I'm handheld.
That's too funny.
So, it was good. I just the art didn't do it for me. That's all.
You know what? I didn't even notice. I noticed that it wasn't quite right, but I didn't notice that it was a different artist, probably because of Frank Darmada.
Yeah, right. He does a great job of keeping it between Michael Perkins and Steve Epting and all those guys, making it look very uniform. But it just was really stiff for me. Yeah.
That dude needs more credit. Speaking of art changes.
Yeah, speaking of art changes, so Final Crisis number 4 finally came out, and we're just going to talk about the comic book, okay? We're going to keep everything else to the side, okay? Like, let's just stay focused on the comics. Oh, how Final Crisis has fallen apart. I'm referring, of course, to the news that J.G. Jones is not drawing, the last issue?
Yeah, he's not doing 7. Neither is Pacheco.
And neither is Pacheco, yeah, which is curious things going on at DC, which we won't comment about. This is a real shame because I was like, wow, now this is getting good.
Yes.
This is a great issue.
I was confused, but in like sort of a chaotic shit's going to hell way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and the thing is, I was like, this world is going to be messed up afterwards.
I'm like, more confused than ever about the ramifications of it. I think the book itself is great, but I read this and I think to myself, what is this affecting? How is this going to, what is going on here? Like, I have no clue. Like, when it ends, is this even going to be? Yeah. Are they sort of letting Grant tell his story and then they're going to just sort of shuffle off to the side and not deal with it?
Remember Rock of Ages? It's not that unlike that.
No, it's not at all, in fact, yeah.
But Rock of Ages was a story in one book. This is supposed to be the crisis.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it's great, and I try not to get caught up in that. But at the same time, I'm like, this is not referenced in any book that's not a Final Crisis tie-in, which is fine. I don't mind that. But if it's supposed to be a crisis, is it going to have any effect, or is it when it ends, is it just going to be, it was a great story we told?
I guess
which it might be, and that's fine, but I'm curious how they're going
to
deal with it.
Well, we just have to find out, I guess. I mean...
It's just weird.
I mean, it's tough because, I mean, like, they're definitely, I mean, obviously, I mean, like, Green Arrow went down. Green Arrow's, they got him. You know,
it
and, like,
feels very final.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
You know, at the end of it, I was like, how are they going to fix this stuff? Like, because they don't have a story.
Fucking Allen's going to come in and he's going to wreck everybody.
Yeah, it was, so good to see Barry.
There was a lot of great scenes in this. Like, I love the whole resistance aspect of it, which was all the people that hadn't been taken over by Darkseid fighting back and people falling. And I love the idea that Dan Turpin was the one turned into the new Darkseid, which, pissed me off because Dan Turpin is always getting.
Remind me who Dan Turpin is.
Dan Turpin was a cop in Metropolis.
And now, he was the one who was in the Superman animated series.
Yes, who got killed by Darkseid.
He was the... Right, okay, right.
He was the one that looked like Jack Kirby.
Right.
He's Kirby creation, but they tied him to Kirby in the cartoon. Mm-hmm. And he was the PI in the first issue.
Okay.
That was going around investigating Darkseid clubs. And they took him. And now he's the new host body for Darkseid. And that was a great scene in the end with the thumbs down and just a great imagery of him.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool with the helmet and everything. That was cool. So apparently the cure to the anti-life equation is to kiss Barry Allen. So if Barry just goes to everybody and kisses them, then they'll be fine.
I believe that you have to love Barry and Barry has to love you back.
Really? I didn't see that in the panel when he kissed Iris and the little lightning bolts and then she was fine.
How about making the Ray cool?
Well, before even the Ray, I liked after he kissed Iris and he says, sorry, I was late. I thought
that was awesome.
That was great. Yeah, that was awesome.
You're a Barry Flash guy, you know.
Yeah,
that's
totally. So
that's the quintessential line from him.
Yeah, but the Ray was great too. Yeah, I thought, this is a great issue, and I thought it was a real shame that the series is having problems, you know.
Now, when I sit here and think about it and actually like go back over my head, I go, aren't there a lot of other threads going on and a lot of other miniseries that I don't see how they tie into this? And what happened to Libra? But then you let all that
go. Yeah.
the one that's glaring to me is Libra. That's glaring. Yeah. But the other ones are all happening in the world as it's become, the dark side world. I mean, the revelations with the specter, that's happening in this world where everybody's under the spell of the anti-life equation.
Yep.
You know, all these things are happening just to the side, the side stories. The only one is Libra, where they built up, and now it's disappeared practically. So that's a weird one.
Finish that up. I love the concept of the anti-life equation. I just, it's so...
It's a mathematical proof that Darkseid is the ruler.
Just so cheesy, like in a 60s sci-fi sense.
Yeah.
You know, just like the if you say all these things in this order, everyone will just lose complete hope. You know,
which is funny because it also ties into like Jesse Quick and Johnny Quick with they have a mathematical equation for speed, you know? So it's like, it's not unheard of. It makes sense.
Especially in the DC lore.
Yeah.
Oh, and it totally works. And I say they run with it like they have.
Yeah. Ron, did you ever try to actually say the equation out loud?
I have actually. Yeah. Anyway, I know I'm a Marvel zombie, but how is Secret Invasion not your pick of the week, Josh? My God, like the moment of your life that you've been waiting for.
I'll tell you one thing: if there was a page of the year, it was in this one, and I am not embarrassed to tell you that at the moment that traitor, that imposter, that
oh, be nice, she's nice, she's got
that
intentions.
Usurper.
Yeah.
When she went down and dropped that, I was like, wait a minute, And then Clint says, "I'll take these,"
and fucking and kicks ass.
Oh, you can hear it in me now.
Oh my God, it was great. And it was a good week for archers. I mean, Green Arrow kicked some ass, even though he got caught. But then Hawkeye just fucking. And admittedly, this is the second time Bendis has used this device where he's grabbed the bow. And yeah, so I'm fully acknowledging that. But it goes to further support my theory that Bendis's overarching Avengers story is a Hawkeye story.
At least, like, the signifier of the whole thing. Like, I'm going to take this guy down really hard and piss off everybody.
Yep.
And clearly it wasn't to piss off everybody, but it was to make his – you know, he waited years to bring this guy back. Yep. And then he's got him farting around.
I don't think it's fully there until he puts the suit back on.
Well, yeah, but that's what we're building up to, you know? Like, that's what it'll be.
Maybe. Because Hawkeye the girl is fully entrenched, and they had the whole thing where they said she's Hawkeye now. And they had the whole series where he passed the mantle.
Yeah, whatever. Heimberg can deal with that.
I think the problem with this issue is the problem that's with – the whole series, and I want to preface that by saying I gave it a 4 because I thought it was fun, is that there was no connective tissue to the fun moments in the issue.
I completely disagree. This was I gave it a 5. I'm putting my bias in there, you know, but this is the big fight, and this is the throwdown, and this is the moment, and there are lots of little moments and little vignettes of what's going on, like when Spider-Man's saying, oh well, it's okay, it's gonna be all right, because it's not like the Watcher shows up, and then oh come on, and then the next page there's the Watcher. But the thing is that I think that it's all building towards what's ever gonna happen in the next issue, which is how it should, you know.
It's funny because it was a different kind of chaos than in Final Crisis. They were both chaos books.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of shit happening, but they were done very differently. And it's funny because this pretty much speaks to your two tastes, you know?
Which are?
You really loved this, and Connor, you really loved Final Crisis. I didn't
dislike this.
This is what World War Hulk was for 7 issues.
Yeah, exactly. But this is good. I don't know. I mean, this is getting to be what we've wanted. This is what the build up. I mean, admittedly, I think 8 issues. I don't disagree that the first, you know, 5 or 6 issues of this were too drawn out, and this really should be like issue 3 or 4. But hey, it's doing it for me, so that's all that matters.
If it was all worth it to get Clint back where he needs to be.
Yeah.
That page was not strong enough for me to make the whole issue the pick of the week. I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. I still, like, I don't know. I feel like I don't see the overall story.
There's still no there there.
Well, I mean, the problem is that it sounds like this story is actually a setup for whatever Dark Reign is going to be. You know, like,
which is a problem.
Yeah.
Because now we're getting to one event that sets up the next event. There's no actual arc change.
No, but Connor, I don't think you understand. It's not an event. It's a status quo change.
Right. Right. Well, if I wanted to, you know, buy that status quo change that's not an event, and I didn't want to go to the comic. I didn't want to go to the comic store anymore. I go to this comic book service, where they have monthly specials up to 75% off your issues. You get 40% off the major publishers with a flat rate shipping fee of $5.95 for all U.S. orders. They order anything in the previews catalog. They've got 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order. You can track your orders online. It's all available at dcbservice.com.
I'll take these. Oh, that was awesome.
It was great.
I literally laughed out loud. I may have thrown my fist in the air.
Yeah.
Oh,
you totally did.
I did. I was drunk with giddiness at that point. Scotch. He still didn't have the suit on. One of the things that I had picked up in the store, I was really hoping it was going to be another Crazy, was Etheric Mechanics, a little graphic novella, as he titled it, by Warren Ellis and Gianluca Pagliarani.
I saw that you wanted to talk about this, and I was curious. I didn't pick it up, so I was curious what you thought of it.
Well, I literally,
Pagliarani.
It's a little story. It's very much like Crazy was a year and a half ago, which was just a one-shot sort of little prestige edition from Avatar. And I turned the back around, and it said 1907, London, England, and that was pretty good for me, by Warren Ellis. And I flipped through it, and I saw this really nice black and white art, and that was all I needed. And what it is, it's like an alternate Sherlock Holmes story where none of the characters have the actual names, but it becomes apparent very quickly that we're talking about Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. But they're in a London that's sort of an alternate history where they've discovered flight through, like, it's not flight like we have it, like, but it's like the ether that propels them. Like, you remember in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, there was the Cavorite, which caused their flying to fly. It's like that, but it's a little Sherlock Holmes story. And it was good. It was really wordy. I almost fell asleep in the middle, but that's because I always get tired in the middle of the afternoon.
Literally just like nodding off.
Yeah, I actually did at one point because it's written in that style. But like the one thing that was cool is that, again, you can just tell that Warren Ellis put his all into this. Like, he liked doing this. It was a lot of fun, and it was really nice black and white, you know, comic book art. Really just great stuff. And if you like this kind of, it's all like alternate science kind of stuff plus Sherlock Holmes, great story.
Cool.
Really good stuff.
Very cool.
Need to check out. It wasn't my favorite thing I read this week, but it's definitely worth mentioning.
Cool. Sounds interesting.
And of course, a new Vertigo number one issue came out, so I read it. Unknown Soldier number one by Josh Dysart, an artist who I'm really, really getting to like. And an artist named Alberto Ponticelli. Apparently there are no American artists anymore doing books.
There really aren't, awesome. Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
It's amazing. All new artists are from Europe or South America. Sorry about that, everyone in the U.S. I don't know a lot about The Unknown Soldier. I have a feeling that I would like it very much if I were to have time to go back and read all of them. Have either of you guys ever read them?
No.
Okay. It's sort of old war comics, basically. And this is a story that takes place. There's this really successful doctor and his wife, and they go to Uganda to do charity work and help the poor and all that. And it appears that the doctor, who is a pacifist, has the spirit of the unknown soldier in him, and he goes nuts and shoots a bunch of bad guys. That's basically what we know so far.
You're
it was
a big
fun.
Fan of Dysart's, right? He wrote the BPRD 1940 books, right?
Yep, 1946 and the upcoming 1947. I can tell that he put a lot into this and a lot of thought. It's almost too much. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you can tell, like, somebody's trying a little too hard.
There was an interview with him in the Vertigo books this week. He went to Africa. He's experienced stuff firsthand. So you can tell, it's probably a very personal story for him.
Yeah, it feels that way. And the thing is, I don't really know where it's going to go yet. It was good. I'm definitely going to buy the next one. The art's really nice. It was very violent. It was very, like, at the end of it, you're like, this is fucked up. This is there's going to be some tough choices for these characters to make, and I really like that. But there hasn't been the hook to grab me in yet, so we'll see. But it was a good start, maybe a little ambitious, but that's always good.
I want to talk briefly about Invincible number 54, which didn't 53 like come out last week or 2 weeks ago?
And he's making good on his guarantee.
Yeah, he really is. This one was wacky fun. Josh, are you now on issues or no?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, this one, it starts off with Invincible and What's-Her-Face, Adam Eve, finally on a date in Paris, and he gets interrupted by these two dudes from the future who look like
an Italian rock band.
They totally did. And they take him into the future because he has to deal with whoever's ruling the world and turns out to be immortal. And it reminded me of Kirkman's Marvel team-up stories that he did, because there was a future story in that. But I just thought it was just kind of random, wacky, almost one-shotty kind of fun.
That was
just kind of, you know, considering all the crap that's happened in this was like almost the exactly kind of like tension breaker that I think we needed in the series. And then it ended with a great kind of montage of Invincible and Adam Eve and their relationship, and then finally a crescendo with them saying they love each other and kissing. And it was like, it reminded me of why I love this book, is that how, because it's wacky and it's personal and it's relatable even though it's wacky and crazy.
I love this one.
Oh, really?
I just thought it was a little like...
I'm not surprised, because I thought you would think that it was too wacky.
No, well, that's not even it. It's just that the things that you just said that you thought you needed to break from...
Yeah.
I want more of that. Let's see what happened with that. And so this was like a detour.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the story matters or not. Now he goes... The thing is, though, like, they come into... They're like... It was like Back to the Future. It was like, quick, you need to come to the future and fix it. And he just goes, okay. And
yeah.
He goes with them.
That's why.
And he's like, what do you need me to kill? And he does. And like, it was just like a little fast. Like, yeah. It was just a, like, he accepted everything too much, and
I acknowledge that. I definitely recognize that
and it was just like
it was a little too convenient. A little too convenient.
Well, then halfway through the book, that part of it is over, and I was like, seriously?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's, you know, it
sounds like the standard breather issue between big stories, where you take a break and have wacky fun and go on a date, and then the next thing happens.
I bet you this is going to be the last issue of the trade, or the first issue of the next trade. You know,
it's going to be the last. It has to be, I think.
Yeah. Oh, well,
it's
fun,
not a good start for the first one.
It was fun.
You can't start the trade with that. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, not bad. Not bad. So Fear Agent 24, very nearly the pick of the week again. And I'm at the end of it, and I was thinking about it, and I sort of look over, and I saw my name, and I was like, that's weird. Literally, like, I was like, I'm looking at the last page. I was like, so what do I have to say about it? Is it something why do I see my name there?
What I like is that you're a ding dong and you clearly have no taste.
I know. I'm a ding dong. My review from the last pick of the week was printed in this one, and I was like, I can't very well pick that book. that's just tasteless. Yeah. But that completely aside, I loved this issue. I loved this issue as much as the last one. There was like it got real Western, but instead of like cowboys, they were bugs and aliens and stuff with guns and six shooters, and just like the point that I made the last time is that it's Rick Remender's point with this book is to torture Keith Houston as much as possible, like really just see how he can wring the most sorrow out of this character. And my God, if he's not doing it,
it's great.
At a certain point, like it just got, it was like everything starts turning good, and I was like, oh man, you're fucked. It's just oh, that's not good. You know, and it totally starts to pay off. And you know, it leaves me wanting to know what happens next, but having had fun with that issue. The way that they do this is like it's a 16-page front story and then like a 5-page backup story. And the backup story was inconsequential but fun, and I thought really, really well drawn. Just really neat layouts and like the way the story was told. And it was by other people. Let's see. It was by Greg Thompson and Kelly Yates.
Yeah.
Just a little. I like that other people come in and do a backup story, just like old comics. And finally, the pinup on the back by Scotty Young, it was just awesome. That was an awesome, awesome pinup. That became my desktop immediately.
I just finished the fourth trade, which was very, very good.
You're gonna like this one. I know you're gonna like this one.
Yeah.
So. Oh, you're gonna love this story.
Yeah.
So this week saw another G.I. Joe reboot. So therefore, I am there for it because
your undying dedication to this property.
It's one of the reasons why I'm here today. So it's one of the best comics ever. So this is IDW now has the rights to G.I. Joe. They got them from Devil's Due. And what they're doing now is they're rebooting the series. We're doing a sequel like IDW. I mean, Devil's – too many companies own this book. Devil's Due got the rights. They did a sequel to the Marvel book. And this is a whole new thing. They're starting over. They're just starting from scratch with the same characters but starting new stories. And this is a $1 preview issue, G.I. Joe number 0.
Oh, I should have bought it.
Which had three short stories, because there's going to be three G.I. Joe books next year. So one story leads into the G.I. Joe proper book, which is going to be written by Chuck Dixon. Oh. And then the second book is G.I. Joe Origins, which tells the origins of how everybody got on the team. That's written by Larry Hama, the original G.I. Joe writer. And the third book is G.I. Joe Cobra, written by Christos Gage, which I think Cobra and Origins are minis, and G.I. Joe is the regular series.
And this is all going to lead right into the movie, which is next year, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So. Wow. So the first story we have, basically G.I. Joe in an early commando run where they intercept some drug runners on the ocean on their ship, and they take them out, and they find out that somebody named Cobra hired them, and they don't know what Cobra is. They don't know. Is it a person? Is it an organization? They don't know anything about it. It's the first time they've heard the word Cobra.
It's a ruthless terrorist organization.
Determined to rule the world. And the Larry Hama one was awesome. It was basically Hawk recruiting Duke, and they're in a room, and the whole time that Hawk's telling him this pitch about this new unit, he's putting a gun together. You know, he's cleaning his gun, putting it together, and at the end of it, he says, if you want to join my unit, you have to die. Your family will think you died in action. They'll get these medals. You'll be a hero, but you'll never use your real name again. You'll be known as Duke. You won't be able to go back to your old life. And then so Duke reluctantly agrees. And then the implication is if he had disagreed, Hawk would have shot him in the head.
Awesome.
This is like they're going like dark. I think they're going like dark military with this. And then the third story was Chuckles undercover infiltrating Cobra deep cover. Like
Chuckles?
Chuckles with the Hawaiian shirt. He was there.
No, I know who Chuckles was. I'm just surprised that they're using him. Wow,
Chuckles with the cover by Howard Chaykin, and he basically they show him through years of going through criminal activity and then becoming trusted enough to be recruited to this organization, which you assume is going to be Cobra. But it's basically the three different aspects of it, and they were all really good. And I was surprised because these things aren't usually good, but they're going serious. They've got good writers on them. You know, military is in Dixon's zone. Larry Hama's you know, clearly the, you know, the G.I. Joe guy. So they have good people doing this, and they've got good artists on it. And I'm actually quite hopeful, which means in about 6 years, I'll be pissed off and I'll drop the book. But wait till I get there. Why is Roadblock not called Roadblock anymore?
It was some lawsuit thing, I think.
I know, but why?
I don't remember.
Someone tell me why he's now known as Heavy Duty.
Do it in the comments.
Yeah, do in the comments. Don't email us. After last week, let's not have a repeat of that. Thank you for everyone, by the way, to telling us that you're still listening to the show.
All of you.
All of you. Me and my big mouth. So speaking of military, I want to talk about DMZ number 35. This is the first issue of a two-issue arc, which two things stuck out at me. Number one, the artist change is not the normal artist that Brian Wood's been working with on this. It's this artist named Christian Donaldson, and the art style is completely different. Whereas DMZ has been a lot, kind of a more sketchier, kind of more rough, kind of more, you know, kind of, you know, you know,
it's a very distinct style. Distinct look. Yeah.
Yeah, this look went way cleaner, a little Becky Cloonan-esque, and not surprisingly. It was a real kind of, you know, jerked my neck back. They were like, oh, art style is different. But it really, really worked. And the story I thought was really cool is that it takes place on Staten Island, because apparently the two, Staten Island is, for some reason, the Free States and the United States Army, it's all about how soldiers behave on the front. And you know how, like, you always believe that they're entrenched and they're, you know, kind of always on alert, but then in reality they're partying and they're dancing, they're trying to make, you know, light of it, and how they throw a party with both armies join up and they just forget about the conflict and they just kind of party, which is a great concept. And then of course it takes a twist at the end, and it was really interesting and just different from what has been done before. So yeah, so Doug DMZ, and it's still rolling along in the issues. I don't know why. Of all, like, I don't like Vertigo, but I buy this book in issues. It's good.
Will you stop saying that? It's a publisher. It's like saying you don't like a record label.
I don't want to get into this. Speaking of record labels, though, if you go to emusic.com/iFanboy, you can find lots of music and lots of record labels that release music. And if you go to emusic.com/iFanboy, you can sign up. You can get free 50 downloads when you sign up. We put up a playlist of some songs that we like, so you can download those if you want to share our taste in music. But if not, if you know, classical is more your thing, go on there. They're MP3s, no DRM, work on any device, work on your iPod. They have a little download app that will put the files right into your iTunes if you use that. So emusic.com/iFanboy. Go check it out.
I've had enough of Penguin Publishing. I just can't stand them anymore.
We have been lax with our user reviews lately because there's been so much show. But they're back, and the first one is by Torque, who read Daredevil number 112, gave the story of 4 and the art of 5. At the time of recording, no one has made this their pick of the week. And he liked the issue, but the problem that he had was, I understand a lot of people really don't care that Matt cheated on Mila, mostly due to their frustration with the marriage in general, but it still puts a black mark in my enjoyment of the book. Yeah, Matt probably shouldn't be married, and even I'll admit that, but to treat it as non-existent simply because Mila is in the asylum, that sticks in his craw. Of particular note to me is how it feels that if Matt were capable of this, I feel like it would have happened during the Black Widow story a few years back or somewhere around there. I don't buy that Matt would simply do this, especially after Mila being on his mind 24/7 only a few issues back. I understand that he's a world-round man whore, but he's got boundaries and this crosses the line. Granted, Matt's reaction feels appropriately self-infuriating, but the fact that it happened in the first place is simply bothersome, given my general rule of rebuffing most adulterous superheroes in comics.
Wow, this is a whole jumbled bit of issues, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Wow, morals.
Yeah. Well,
I love that he did it because he needs to move on from Mila, and I think he's a good match for Dakota. So I was happy last. I think we talked about it last time. Mm-hmm. I was happy that he slept with Dakota. That was great. But with this issue, I realized something that was hard for me to admit, in that he is just a dick. Matt.
Well, here's the thing.
The character that he's come to at this point, that they've written him into, he is unpleasant.
Yeah, and the thing is, and by no means, and trust me, by no means am I defending, you know, adultery or anything like that. But from a story standpoint, it seems like there's a, you know, like, I'm not surprised it happened, because with all this negativity and all the shit that's happening to him, stuff like that, when you want to latch on to something good, I guess, you know? I mean, so it's relatable, and I think that his reaction in this issue was correct, and that he's beating himself up and all that kind of stuff. But I agree with you. Like, Bendis wrote Daredevil with such a reverence and such a nobility, and yeah. Brubaker, it seems as if, has taken that and really kind of shit on it, you know? Like, he's
unpleasant. He's completely unpleasant. Yeah, he's mean to Dakota in this issue for no reason. It looked like they were bringing him out of the doldrums of being depressed, and now he's just mean.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about this is, and this has always been true, Matt is self-destructive.
Yeah, true. Yep.
I mean, he makes bad decisions. Yep. That's what the character is. And the thing is, if Brubaker's writing this all along and he's like, wow, they're having a really good time relationship-wise, you know, what's Matt going to do? Well, he's going to make a mistake in his personal life because he's done it lots and lots of times before.
Yeah.
So mistake is one thing. It's the reaction afterwards. He was just a jerk.
Yeah. And that's fine, but that's what he's doing. He's being self-destructive again. Like, he doesn't know how to deal with anything outside of rage. Now, you're right, but the thing is, all of these things that have happened to him have turned him into this character who he is now. You know what I mean? Like, but that's on the writers for the last
right. And
30.
That's the problem I've got. No, not 30 years. It's been since Brubaker's been on the book. I have a serious problem with.
Yeah, no, I agree. The direction he's taken him is bizarre.
It's not the way he was under Bendis. He wasn't a jerk under Bendis. He was self-destructive without being an asshole.
Yeah, he was noble. Yeah. It's a grace thing.
I'm having problems with Daredevil. I'm having serious problems with it. I thought I was getting out of him, but I don't know.
All right, so the next review is of Echo number 7, and it comes from Eric Wilder, who gave the story a 4 out of 5 and art a 4 out of 5, and at the time of recording, 1% of the iFanboy Nation have made it their pick. Eric writes that he likes how the story has evolved to allow personal motive to guide the characters, rather than just the quote-unquote, the government's chasing us. Particularly with these last couple of issues, I get the feeling that Julie has not only bonded with the suit that used to be Annie's, but some residual form of Annie's being as well. If that is the case, then it makes even more sense that Julie would be on the run with Annie's former boyfriend protecting her, and could even have greater implications of where they find themselves next. Echo is one of the most pleasant surprises of this year, as far as I'm concerned, is that each issue, I know you guys were kind of rough with it when it got started, but each issue just builds it stronger and stronger and builds the intrigue.
I wasn't. That's not true.
Whoa, that's not true at all. Oh, that is not true at all. All right.
Okay. Okay. Well, you guys were rough with the slow starting and all that kind of deal, but now
I reserved judgment until I knew what it was.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah. But so now 7 issues in, are you still enjoying it? Or are you glad you stuck in there?
I mean, the last issue was pick of the week for Connor.
Yeah.
Yep.
Of all people. You know, and this is it's great. It's that monkey got messed up.
Monkey did get messed up.
the monkey seemed very David Lynchian.
Yes. Yeah.
I had a very David Lynchian vibe of a monkey chained to the ground throwing rocks at people. Like,
yeah,
it was very like all of a sudden it was a dog, then it was a monkey. It was just very sort of like
the Chinese kid throwing fireworks boogie nights. Yeah. Hey, yeah. Chinese.
Nice. So if you want to leave a comment or review of a book want to leave ratings of the books that you bought this week, go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can rate them. You can leave reviews. And every Monday we highlight some of the best user reviews. So go to ifanboy.com and read them. And we'd love to hear what everybody thinks of their comics and see who made their pick of the week and all that kind of deal. What was your pick of the week, Connor, by the way? Was it Final Crisis or?
It was New Krypton.
New Krypton. Oh, okay. Good. Nice.
Really, damn right. Really good.
I love how the pick of the week choosing is like so like it's like pressure for you. Like it's easy for me. I'm just like, oh, it's this one, you know. But like you really think about it. I respect that. So that's good.
Who are you talking to?
Connor.
Wasn't his pick, you know?
No, I know, but it used to be the three of us only had to worry about the pick of the week once every 3 weeks. But
now you have to choose it every.
Now you choose it every week, and you've made comments where it feel like it weighs on you every week.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I treat it like if it was my week.
It's good.
I don't just randomly do shit. Throw a dart at the board and see which one I pick.
I like when that monkey blew up. Pick of the week. It is. Pick of the week.
All right. It's user email time. We got some email from Jamie from Leeds in England. And he says, I was wondering today after reading another Twitter about a book being late, and it got me wondering, in this new day and age with all the sites like Facebook and Twitter giving us greater insights into creators' lives, is this a good thing for you as a fan? Was there something more special about reading your letter printed in a comic than sending out a post on Brian Michael Bendis's Jinx World message board and getting your answer there? I mean, if you subscribe to all the possible ways of being in contact with the creators you like, would you basically know their lives inside and out? I'll be honest, I like it, find it great fun to talk to these guys and find out that most of them have a massive love for what they're doing. I would like to know your position on this. Also, you guys are the same, though you are on every social network site, and it means you are giving a whole lot back to the iFan base, and I think that's great.
I agree and disagree with him. I do think that we have way too much insight into some particular people's lives. But that said, it's really cool. I mean, it's just an extension of what started in the 60s with Stan. I mean, that's really cool. I mean, right now, if you want...
Is it better or worse? Would you rather see your article printed, your letter printed in a comic, or would you rather get your message in a message board post?
I honestly, the message boards is now's letter column. I mean, obviously, how many books have letter columns anymore, you know?
It's almost more personal because the fact is you can have interactions with these people, you know. Used to be that you could do that at cons, which was awesome, and now it's like you could do it every day if you wanted to.
Right.
Now, the question about you know, you, like, you can see if their stuff's been late or whatever, like, that's interesting. Although I note that the really late people, those, they're not on, because they're late because they're out living their lives. The dudes who are on Twitter all day, they're in. They're working on their books. It's not a problem. Brian Reed's not putting out late work. Paxton's getting a shit in on the deadline. You know what I mean? Warren Ellis, not a story. But Jim Lee's not on there. He's up doing shit with all his money.
Oh, God. All right.
It's good if you want to be into that, like, it, if that's what makes you feel good about comics. Like, there's, you, when it comes to art, there's, it can go either way. You know, you can be the guy who wants to know everything about the people who created it, or the one who doesn't. So,
right.
You know, they're both of those things. Steve Ditko's not doing any interviews. You can love his work for all time.
How great would it be if Steve Ditko was on Twitter? Oh, my God. Someone needs to do a fake Steve Ditko on Twitter. Am I right?
How great, I wouldn't want to cross him.
How great would that be?
Yeah, no. Oh,
God. So if you have any questions you want to ask us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
He would punch you in the face.
Via Twitter, yeah.
One of the, no, in real life, he would come to your house. One of the Twitter things punch that I would be doing if Steve Ditko came to my house would be watching discs I got from Netflix. See that? Netflix is has over 90,000 titles, most titles available on Blu-ray. You can get shipped to you. They get free shipping both ways. Most of the stuff will come to you in one day and get to go back in one day. So if you want a free 2-week trial, get to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. And if you don't have it, it's a damn good waste of time. Damn good.
Damn good. All right, so on to the voicemail. We got a rare voicemail thanking with some thanks.
Hey, iFanboy, this is Ben from St. Louis, also known as Neb in the iFan Nation. I was just giving you guys a call to update you guys on the lending library that I set up in my room. We have passed a milestone. I have had over 125 checkouts, which equates to about 400 comic book checkouts and about 30 trade checkouts. So I want to thank you guys for promoting the library on the show, and I want to thank the iFan base for their generous, generous donations. Thank you guys so much, and have a great one. Bye.
Did he get beamed up by Scotty? It's a fucking transporter noise.
That was weird.
What?
He totally, Scotty.
Are you there, Ben?
Scotty beamed him up at the end of the message.
I didn't think I could take any more of these comic lending.
Wow.
Oh, that was great.
It was too bad because apparently Romulans hate it.
You just made a Star Trek joke.
You're damn right, too.
Oh, man, that was great. Well, I'm glad to hear that it's working out, Ben. And by thanking us, you get another plug for your project. So there you go.
If you don't know, he's a teacher who set up a library at his school to lend out comics to kids to read. But
he broke the Prime Directive.
They were invaded.
Well, he went and he gave to the primitive societies. He gave them comics. I don't know what the fuck they were looking at.
And I know enough about it to get the joke, apparently.
Actually, he wasn't transporting away. That was Harry Mudd transporting on board because he wanted some books. So.
Oh, nice. Let's move on from this before it gets really right.
Matt, who, by the way, we'd love to have some barbecue with someday, has a question for us.
Hey, guys. This is Matt from Madison, Wisconsin. I have a quick question for you. I was wondering, I know you've talked in the past about not being huge fans of licensed comics, but I was curious, if you had to pick one to check out, what would you pick? What would each of you pick? You know, out of like Battlestar, Ghostbusters, Chuck, Supernatural, all those, you know, licensed titles from TV shows or whatever. What would you pick? Thanks, man. Enjoy the show. Bye.
I like a question that starts with a premise that says, I know you don't like this, but if you did.
Well, that's the funny thing is that I'm sure one of us has said sometime that we don't like licensed comics or whatever, but like, I don't think I said that because for some odd reason, I'm oddly drawn to them in the store. Like, I always look at the Battlestar book. I think about buying them, and I have to consciously not buy them.
I don't think it's that we don't like licensed books. I think it's that most of them are bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the money is spent on getting the license.
Right. Yeah.
However, there's many good examples. We just talked about G.I. Joe. I mean, that was literally to sell toys.
Pretty much at least once a year, I buy one of the Voltron books. I just did a couple of weeks ago. There was a new Voltron series, and I bought the first issue. I was like, oh, Voltron.
Yeah. Little bits.
Yeah. I've actually been buying Chuck, which has been good. If you like the show, the writers of the show write the book, so it's very much in keeping with the show. So I buy that. If I had to buy any, I would probably if they have we buy Buffy. Buffy's a licensed book, so kind of, which the show's over. Probably look at Star Wars, because everyone says who reads it, they're really good. But that's not a TV show, like you mentioned. I don't know. I buy Chuck. I'm exempt from answering the question.
And I'll tell you, the time I got burned the most was I was high Shield. On the Shield. Yeah, and I bought like Shield from IDW. That was the worst thing I've ever seen. Oh,
it couldn't be as bad as the 24 one shots.
Those
were
awful.
I think it was like the same deal.
Yeah.
Like,
it was the same year. It was the same year. Yeah.
Same company, I think.
Wonderful.
Just horrid.
Oh God. All right. So we were wondering about somebody, but before we could say it on air, he called us.
Gail Simone is one of the best writers in comics right now. Even better than Bendis. Supporter.
Somebody's got a crush.
Well, you know what he did in that, though?
What?
He acknowledged that Bendis was good.
Well, yeah, true. Well, for those who don't know, that was Daryl, who is a longtime listener and caller who stalks the streets of New York. And if you're a member of the Bendis board on Jinx World, please post this and tell Bendis that Daryl said that Gail Simone is better than him. There.
Yes. But, yeah, good. I don't happen to like her writing.
I gotta admit that I don't like her writing either, but I did read the first trade of Welcome to Tranquility from Wildstorm, and it was really good. And I think I don't like her writing characters I know, but the characters she's making up, I'm fine with, I guess. Wow, I just said I read something, I like something she wrote. Eek. So, I don't know.
I'm glad people like her. She's got a very loyal following. Good.
And if you go to a con that she's signing at, she's always signing, which is good, which is great, because, you know. So if you have any questions, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
All right, let's wrap up this monkey explosion.
You can go to ifanboy.com to read Josh's – it was you, Josh, yes. Josh's full pick of the week review. You can read about his thoughts on Superman there, and you can check out all of our in-depth discussion on comics, our weekly writers. You may want to check out Paul Dini or people like that. And if you are a big fan of Sonya's column, we've moved it from Friday to Thursday, so you can find it on Thursdays now.
All day on Thursday, I kept thinking it was Friday. I was totally thrown off.
Oh, sorry about
that. I
was like,
oh, Jesus, I've lost a day.
If you go to ifanboy.com/store, you can check out amazon.com and the wonderful things that we have there for you to purchase. If you like comic books, we always highlight the books talked about in the video show. And you can purchase any comics, video games, music, anything you like through Amazon. You help us out in the process. So go to ifanboy.com/store.
Wednesday, traditionally the day of comic books, also the day of the iFanboy video show. So you got so much to look forward to on Wednesday. It used to be hump day. Now it's super awesome day. last week, there was the unrelated Vault show. we've realized that our books are unrelated, so there it was. Great books, though.
Yeah.
And this week, coming up, the politics show, where we take our shirts off and fight over right and left-wing issues. Or we just talk about books that have politics in them. I forget what happened.
It wasn't even that long ago.
No.
Yeah, well, after we're done fighting, we all put on our iFanboy t-shirts. We got them at jinx.com/iFanboy. You can go there to get your iFanboy shirts. It's iFanboy in the front, intern on the back. You can join the intern group and help us carry our equipment at cons.
And as mentioned earlier, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. And when you leave a voicemail, please leave your name and where you're from and try to keep it to about 30 seconds. And please, people, you know, have a little consideration. Be nice. That's all I'm going to say. You know who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
You know who you are.
With the aforementioned social networks, Twitter, MySpace, ComicSpace, Facebook, all that stuff, you can get to at ifanboy.com/about, and we can help you waste your time. Sounds nice.
Sound like Yoda there.
And if you like the show, you can write a review for the show on iTunes or for this audio show or for the video show. That helps people find the show, and we really appreciate it. So you go on iTunes and do that. Or better yet, tell your friends who like comics or don't like comics or just like three rambling dudes who fight without their shirts
on. Rambling, rambling, rambling.
I'm a dude.
Rambling.
Rambling on.
Spread the iFanboy word.
So, and also, if you like iFanboy, you can support iFanboy by going to ifanboy.com/donations, where you can donate to us via PayPal, help us keep us going. Times are tough. We need every help we can get and giving you this wonderful content on a daily basis. So please go to ifanboy.com/donations, and thank you to everyone who's donated. We know the times are tough, and it's hard for you to donate anything at all, so we appreciate everybody who has. So thank you very much.
We will keep on rambling.
Ramblin'. I'm a ramblin'.
I want to see Jaws song again, but I'm not going to.
That's a Steve Martin bit, right? The ramblin'?
I think so.
Yeah. It's right with the banjo. It's like, I'm ramblin' over here. Yeah, okay, got it.
The other night I was watching TV late working, and I saw Jaws was on, and I turned it on, and it was right at the singing scene.
Oh,
jeez. And that led right to the chum in the water scene, and I just laughed and laughed and laughed.
Nice.
Oh, why don't you come down here and chum some of that shit?
All right.
2 weeks in a row.
All right, so until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm just Josh.
When I say until next week, I don't know what I mean by that. Like, next week I might not be Ron. I might be...
Well, you're putting your foothold on Ron until next week. All right, and then you will reassert that. It's sort of like re-upping a domain registration.
Nice, there you go.
I'm going to squat Ron.
Ron, I'll offer you $40,000 for Ron. Right now, you don't have $40,000. Suddenly I'm down in Herald Square. Looking in the crowd, your face is everywhere. Been turning around. Do you want me now? Do you want me now?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened, because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.